As a society, we take great pride in the fact that we're not judgmental. Live and let live. But there's a reason why people watch Judge Judy in Divorce Court, a reason why shows like L.A. Law, CSI, and Law and Order have long been part of the primetime lineup, a reason why we've been consumed by the cases of O.J. Simpson, Casey Anthony, and now the whole business with Trayvon Martin. Fact is, we're lawyers and judges, every one of us. When the guilty walk free, our blood boils. We're frosted when the innocent are condemned. And we feel no little satisfaction when others get what's coming to them. But we're more than lawyers and judges. Secretly, we wonder how we would hold up under the spotlight of justice. If put on trial for a misdemeanor, is it just possible we'd be convicted of a felony? A couple of weeks ago, I was watching a crime investigator being interviewed for his new TV show. When asked how he got so many criminals to confess, he revealed a method surprisingly simple. He'd knock on the door of an unsuspecting soul, and having flashed a badge, he'd say, "We know what you did, and you won't get away with it much longer." Now, what's funny is that the investigator often walked in with only a hunch, and sometimes not even that. But time and time again, people broke down, confessing their crimes, many of which the investigator had no clue about. The telltale heart. And so, feeling guilty, we get about the business of justifying ourselves. Someone eats an ice cream cone, but feels strangely compelled to tell you that he's going to exercise later, or that he ate a salad for lunch. A gal shows up in a beautiful new dress, but adds that she got it at the bargain box, or it was a one-time splurge. And of course we lie. We lie to our doctors, our bosses, our friends, to make ourselves look better, to win their approval, their favorable verdicts. While we want to look good in the eyes of others, even more I think we want to look good in our own eyes, to think well of ourselves. So we lie to ourselves. We explain away our bad behavior with mitigating circumstances. We blame others. We pretend or simply ignore the charges. We pile up a heap of good works that will somehow balance the scales, taking pride in charity, going to church and reading our Bible. And when we've done good, we say, "To God be the glory," all the while patting ourselves on the back. But you don't have to be a Christian to think that way. Throw away the Ten Commandments and you'll produce 613 more. So you don't go to church. You've paid for a couple of abortions. You sleep around. You've skimmed a little off the top. Dumped your wife. What of it? You recycle. And you don't smoke. You support gay rights and women in the priesthood. You're concerned with global warming and the environment, industrial farming and Chinese factories. You've posted against Coney, marched against illiteracy, hunger, and all the right types of cancer. And your hybrid sports a coexist bumper sticker, which proves definitively that you are not judgmental, unlike some people you know. Well, we're all practiced in the art of self-justification. But now we're on to familiar Lutheran territory. Lutherans are, ironically enough, often accused of overemphasizing forensic justification. But rather than offer up a defense, perhaps we should just admit it and say guilty as charged. But then we do well to remember that justice isn't just a Pauline concept, and you don't need to go to Romans to find a courtroom. What are the Gospels but a drama that ends in a trial? And what do we see in that courtroom but the only man in all of human history who could have truly justified himself but chose not to. And it is that courtroom drama we witness today. The legal team for the prosecution includes an assembly of elders, chief priests, and scribes. Pontius Pilate plays the judge, and Jesus, acting as his own counsel, stands accused. As the trial proceeds, the accusers sling mud, but to their frustration, it just won't stick. Jesus was no revolutionary, no foe of the empire. He urged payment of taxes to Caesar, told Peter to put away his sword. What could they really accuse him? Of making the blind to see and the deaf to hear? Of cleansing lepers, healing paralytics, and bringing the dead back to life? The whole trial was absurd, a circus. Pilate may not have had the wisdom of Solomon, but even a fool could tell that Jesus was innocent. Even one as feckless as Herod had to concur in the judgment. Jesus had done nothing worthy of death. A decent enough politician, Pilate offers up a deal. We'll give him another beating and then let him go. But the high church accusers incite the crowd into a mob, shouting, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate tries again. "Why, what evil has he done? I found no guilt deserving death." But the mob grows restless and shouts all the louder until Pilate relents and hands over for crucifixion an innocent man. An unjust trial, if there ever was one, makes you sick to your stomach. And yet, beneath the surface, another trial is taking place. And in this trial, every accusation is true, every charge verified, every allegation corroborated by rock-solid evidence. Yes, a crime has been committed. Many crimes. Crimes against humanity, crimes against God. And Jesus was getting what was coming to him. Or should we say, he allowed himself to get what was coming to us. He's accused of our crimes, and he's denying nothing. Our own hands bloody, we watch as Jesus takes the rap. Instead of standing up for himself or justifying himself, he says nothing in his own defense. Guilty Barabbas, a murderer and a rebel, is set free, and the innocent Jesus offers no word of protest. And now we too are left speechless. No more excuses. No more balancing the scales. Our days of self-justification are over. Anything we say on our own behalf would only sully the moment. Anything we do to try to make ourselves look or feel better would only tarnish the gift and take away from the sacrifice. And in a strange way, we can only think, better him than me. We bow our heads in Eucharistic thanksgiving, and the curtain closes, and we come to the end of the second act.